Okay, good morning and good afternoon or early evening for those of you who are in Israel. Good to see everybody. A little bit of a 2 week break, I think, or so. We stopped a little bit before Pesach, so almost 2 weeks. And I'm not sure how regularly we'll be able to keep this up. Depends on my schedule and other commitments. But hopefully, at least once, twice, maybe even three times. But I hope once or twice a week we'll be able to have at least the Pirkei Avos shiur and the Parshas HaShavua shiur, both of which were started in the weeks leading up to Pesach. So we already gave two shiurim on the first parak of Pirkei Avos, and as you all know, there's a very long-standing custom to study Pirkei Avos during the weeks in between Pesach and Shavuos, and we just started the week that it is traditional to learn the second parak of Pirkei Avos. And I recommend it to you. Not that Pirkei Avos needs my haskama, and one of the most incredible treasure troves of wisdom in all of Chazal. In addition to whatever learning you do on your own throughout the week, I thought it made sense to have one shiur this week where we focused on one of the Mishnayos in the second parak and studied it more in depth and gleaned some of the lessons that Chazal had in mind for us. So what I wanted to do is actually spend some time now and study the first Mishnah, the opening Mishnah of the second Perek, which is actually quite a big Mishnah, certainly big. In general, there are a lot of big Mishnayos in Perek Bet, I think, but this is a big Mishnah, chock filled with a lot of things. We can't do everything, but hopefully we can hit some of what I think are the relevant highlights. So let's first read the Mishnah, just translate it simply, and then we'll go back and take a few of the points and study those more in depth. So the Mishnah says in the opening of the second parak, Rebbe Omer, Rebbe here is a reference to none other than Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the son and successor of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. He was both the leader in his time, and of course, perhaps most famously, as the redactor of all of the Mishnah. It was under his leadership that momentous and history-changing decision that was made to put what was until then merely an oral tradition, Torah Sheval Peh, and permit it to be written down and organized into what we now know as the Mishnah. That's Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So Rabbi Omer, Ezu hi derech yishara sheyavor lo ha'adam, what is the proper straight path that a person should choose? Kol shehi tiferes li oseha, v'tiferes lo min ha'adam. Anything that is beneficial to the person, him or herself, and also brings that person praise from other people. Kind of a surprising definition of how a person should be making moral or ethical choices, and something which I think we'll have to get back to. Mishnah continues and says, a second piece of advice from Rebbe, Hebi zohir b'mitzvah kala kibachamura, she'en ata yodea matan scharan shel mitzvos. Be careful and zealous and your performance of all mitzvos, even those which you might think are lighter or less serious, because you don't really know the true reward of any mitzvah. Number three says Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, "V'hevi mechashev hefseid mitzvah keneged schara, uschar aveira keneged hefseida." There's not much to add to the simple reading of this particular phrase. It seems to be pretty straightforward and very important, which is that a person always has to do a certain calculation and calculate the cost of not doing a mitzvah, because even mitzvahs sometimes come with costs, but balance that out against what the reward will be. And obviously the implication is that the reward will outweigh the cost. And the opposite, says the Mishnah, schar avera keneged hefseida. There may very well be certain benefits to a certain avera, certain pleasure or certain short-term benefits, but have in mind the long-term downside. So have that calculation. And fourth and finally, the Mishnah concludes with its own, something that really could have been a Mishnah in itself. It's so chock full and rich with meaning. Fourth and final thing of the Mishnah, Histakel b'shlosh edvarim v'iyata bali de'avera. If you will constantly keep in mind three things, you'll never come to sin. And what are those three things? Dala mala mimcha. That seems to be an introductory phrase. We'll see when we get more be'iyun into this Mishnah that not everyone's going to agree to that. But the simple reading of the Mishnah is that's kind of an introductory phrase. Remember what's above you, and that introduces two of the three. Eye and roa, there's an ever-seeing eye. Oz and shomas, there's always somebody who's listening to you. And then third and finally, v'chol ma'asecha b'sefer nichtavin. All of your deeds are written down, I guess in God's book or God's ledger. So those three things make up the combined triad the three things that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi says, if you remember or you keep all these three in mind, iyata b'li de'avera. So as we, again, as we delineated when we were reading through the Mishnah, basically four different points in the Mishnah, all of which are very important advice from Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Again, and we will perhaps, you know, we'll touch on all four, but I think I really have what to add in terms of Mefarshim in three of the four. So let's start at the beginning. The first piece of advice that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi had given us, which is how do you know what's the right thing? What's the smartest thing? What should you do? The Derech Yeshara Shiyavur La'adam. What's that way? How should you figure out one litmus test to figure out how you should live your life? So I would say, personally, it's a surprising answer from Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, as I alluded to when we first read the Mishnah. You should do things which are tiferes le'oseha, which give some kind of a praise or benefit to the person who's doing the mitzvahs, to you who does it, and tiferes lo mina adam, and gives you praise and honor from other people. So especially the second half seems particularly strange. I mean, we all know that there are things which we do which are noticed and praised by other people, but we wouldn't usually think of Chazal, of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi telling us, you know, when you're trying to decide what to do, think about what people are going to praise you for. Right? That doesn't seem to be what you would expect. Hard to take the Mishnah at face value. So in fact, among the various commentaries on the Mishnah, both the Rambam initially in his parish commentary to the Mishnah, and more accessible, you know, on almost any Mishnah you might take off the shelf, Rabbi Avadya Bar Tanura, who basically elaborates on the Rambam, he's not adding anything of his own, he's elaborating on the Rambam. The Rambam and the Bar Tanura basically say that this somewhat funny or surprising phraseology is really another way of expressing the Rambam's famous doctrine of the golden mean. The Rambam's idea of the Derech Mimutzat, being balanced, being moderate, the golden mean, the Shvil HaZahav, which he discusses both in Hilchos Deos and the Mishneh Torah, and in the Shemona Prakim, both of which I think are much more famous than his comments on the Mishnah here in the second parak, but in a very short line, he alludes to his broader doctrine. The Rambam is famous for this, and the Bar Tanura actually elaborates on the Rambam here in our Mishnah. And they both say specifically that our Mishnah is talking about character traits, midos. And if you want to know, says the Rambam, says the Bar Tanura, which midos, which character traits are the ones that you should focus on, or how should you focus on them? So the Rambam and the Bar Tanura say that the way you should work on your midos and your character development is that you should avoid the extremes. After all, they say, there are many attributes that you could take upon yourself, which could be tiferes lo la'adam. They could be beneficial to you. You could focus in an extreme way on a certain mida, and that could give you benefit. Right? You know, if you have a tunnel vision on a very specific thing and you're, so to speak, an extremist in that, one could get really successful in many ways from that. On the other hand, you won't necessarily be doing it in a way that is beneficial to other people or that other people will respect. Therefore, says the Bar Tanura, says the Rambam, you have to figure out a way to balance your character traits, balance your personality such that it will be beneficial to you. No one is saying, certainly not the Rambam, not Bar Tanura, no one is saying you should be a martyr and always be a shmata, be a schlepper, let everyone walk over you. No, you have to have certain midos that give yourself a certain standing, a certain personality, an ability to be successful, but you have to moderate in a way that you're not only thinking about what's best for you, but also in a way that will be beneficial and be respected by other people. Not as we initially asked, as the Mishnah perhaps might be read simplistically. Not that you should be doing things in order to get praise from other people, but rather you should use other people's reaction to your personality, the way other people perceive you. That's not irrelevant. A lot of people, and I think some people have this as a lifelong character trait, and I would call it a character flaw, and in many cases it comes with sometimes with adolescence or teenagehood or young adulthood, where people are really trying to find who they are and identify and be true to themselves, and often that, which is very admirable, but often that can sometimes be expressed in a way of, you know, I do what's right for me, what I believe, and don't really care about how anybody else perceives it. And the Bar Tanura and the Rambam are explaining that this is exactly what the Mishnah is saying you shouldn't be doing. Rather, you need to do what you think is right and what's going to help you, but one of the measuring sticks for whether you're doing it in the right way, whether you have the right character traits as you're going about doing that thing, is how other people react. You need to balance those two together. Not do things that are only good. Don't be a martyr. Don't do just things that are good for other people, even if it's not good for you. But on the other hand, don't only focus on what's good for you and ignore how other people react. The Bar Tanura specifically gives an example of how we spend our money. Again, the Rambam also discusses this in other contexts, but here the Rambam doesn't say anything. But just to illustrate the point, the Bar Tanura says very powerfully, and I think very succinctly, but to the point, he says, listen, a person could be very miserly, keep all his money to himself, to herself, and that's good for you. That's Tiferes Lo La'adam. You'll keep all your money. On the other hand, if you don't benefit anybody with whatever blessings God has given you, you know, that's not really right. On the other hand, the person could give away everything, could be so generous that they have nothing for themselves. Says the Rambam, says the Bar Tanura, that's also incorrect. Rather, what should we be aiming for? What the Bar Tanura here calls nedivut, right? There are different ways of talking about being charitable, but the particular word that the Bar Tanura says, which is this synthesis, this middle way, the proper balanced way, is what he calls to being a nadiv. That is being generous, but being in a balanced and proportionate way that you don't lose what you need for yourself and for your own family. And even though that's a good example, as the Bar Tanura very powerfully, V'chein hadin b'shar kol hamidos. It's not only your personality trait in terms of how charitable you are or not, but this is a template, that's a paradigm for how you should be in everything. Courage, fear, charity versus not, think of anything. Love versus hate, soft versus harsh, you know, quick to end, all the things. There's, if you go to an extreme, it might be good for you, but always balance that out and moderate that based on how it will be perceived by others. I just want to add one more point before we continue on in the Mishnah, which is that both the Rambam and the Bar Tanura focus on character trait, midos. When Rabbeinu Yonah is commenting on this Mishnah, Rabbeinu Yonah specifically says, not talking about the middle, he doesn't quote the Rambam and get into the whole middle way, but Rabbeinu Yonah specifically says we're talking about not your character traits, your midos, but rather how you perform mitzvos. And I think this is a different nuance. It's a similar idea, basically, but it's a different nuance, which I think is very important, timeless, but also quite timely. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, when it comes to doing mitzvos, do them in a way that isn't only how you feel is the right way to do the mitzvah, but also keep in mind how other people will perceive you. Do mitzvos in a way that people will perceive that as you're doing something that's truly admirable, whether they do that mitzvah or not, but they admire you for the way you're doing it. That's not, again, not in a way that you're just doing it because you want kavod. That's obviously not what Rabbeinu Yonah is trying to say. But rather, how people will perceive your performance of the mitzvah is an indication of whether you're doing the mitzvah the right way. In what it's a nice idea perhaps, but it seems a little bit too abstract and vague. So Rabbeinu Yonah gives a very specific example. There could be other examples, but Rabbeinu Yonah's example is timing, right? Rabbeinu Yonah, had a certain sense for, you know, the phrase or the insight which we're familiar of timing is everything. So Rabbeinu Yonah says timing is really very key. He says there could be certain mitzvos in which it's the right thing to do, but the wrong time. So maybe for you it's right, but if the timing is going to be perceived negatively by other people, so then keep that in mind. Maybe that's not what you should be doing. Not only do what's right for you at the right time for you, but what about at the right time for other people? And I have to just, if you'll indulge me for a minute, I could not help but think about something which, I'd say throughout the Frum world, we are struggling with over the last few weeks, which is the issue of public tefillah, of minyanim, right? Minyan is an inherent good, obviously. But what Rabbeinu Yonah is telling us is that the timing of whether we have minyanim or not, and how we have minyanim, and how our actions will be perceived by others in the Jewish and especially the non-Jewish community is just as important. You want to know what's the right thing to do? What's the derech yishara shiavar lo asa adam? Don't just think, well, tefillah b'tzibur is a good thing. I want to daven with a minyan. You have to also ask yourself, what will be tiferes lo min ha'adam? How will other people perceive this? And if the whole world is saying, keep social distancing, don't gather together, and you have in your particular municipality, wherever you're living, there are rules and guidelines about that. And if you're going to meet anyway, So that is the farthest thing from Derech Yeshara Shiavar Lo Adam. The timing, the action inherently is good, but the timing makes it all wrong. And it's a mistake, this Rabbeinu Yonah says. And again, if Rabbeinu Yonah has to tell us, and Yehuda HaNasi had to tell us in Perkei Avos, the reason we needed a Mishnah, the reason we needed Rabbeinu Yonah to explain it, is because we understand human nature could be to miss this. Human nature could be hardwired to think, well, if this is the right thing to do, if this is a mitzvah, then I gotta do it. And we see, unfortunately, again, I don't need to call out any specific examples, and there's too many anyway, but we've seen this over the last few weeks in Jewish and Frum communities throughout the world, in Israel and in the diaspora, where certain people, despite what the municipalities have said, and despite what Rabbanim have said, certain people have decided, no, doesn't matter what the timing is, doesn't matter if the whole world is doing one other thing, I need to have a minyan now, and I need to daven in public. And that is clearly not the Derech Yeshara that Perkei Avos is telling us to choose. It may be good for you, but that timing is definitely not going to be Tiferes Lo Min HaAdam. It's not perceived by our fellow Jews, and certainly not by the non-Jewish world in a good way. Okay, I'm off my soapbox, back to Perkei Avos, and we continue with the second thing in the Mishnah, quickly, but it's important, and that is the Mishnah telling us that we should take both what's called a mitzvah kala, the light, or the less chamur mitzvos, as seriously as we take the quote-unquote more chamur, more severe, more serious mitzvos. So just to put something out there, which we're not going to talk about, there's a huge discussion in Mefarshim on our Mishnah and in other sources that discuss the fact that our Mishnah seems to assume that there is such a thing as more severe, more chamur, and less severe, more kal mitzvos. Whereas there's other sources in Chazal that seem to say there is no such thing as a kal or a chamur. And it seems to be a contradiction between our Mishnah and other sources and a big, big literature. Is it really true? Is there such a thing as a more severe, a more important mitzvah, a less important mitzvah? That's a discussion which is huge and important, but not the one I have a few minutes to discuss. But if you just take our Mishnah at face value, which seems to assume that there are things which can be perceived as kal and chamur, nevertheless, the Mishnah tells us, do all of them, even the quote-unquote kal mitzvos, with equal zeal and equal enthusiasm. And here also, the Bar Tanura, elaborating on and mimicking the Rambam, basically explains, just again, just adding a little bit to the Mishnah itself, which is that we're talking about positive mitzvos, mitzvos asei. Because other than one or two examples in the whole Torah, positive mitzvos, we are not given the actual reward for. We are not told what the schar is. And therefore, ain ata yodeh matan scharen, as the Mishnah says. You don't know what the reward is. Therefore, what you think might be kal might actually be chamur, and therefore you should do it seriously. The Mefarshim do add that this is in contrast to avoiding an avera, a lotase, because there the Mefarshim point out, and the Bar Tanura gives you a whole list, we actually have a delineation throughout the Torah, and certainly throughout Chazal, of specific punishments and different levels of punishment for different averos. We have four different capital punishments, four different death penalties, which Chazal debate which is the more or less severe, but it's clear in Chazal that each of the four death penalties are all severe, but they reflect different levels of severity. We have kares, misa bidei shamayim, lashes, malkus, and then you even have averos, which don't get a earthly punishment. And it's assumed, even the Mefarshim say this explicitly here on Pirkei Avos, it's assumed that those different punishments do reflect different levels of severity. But that's all about the lotases, the negative commandments. But when it comes to the mitzvahs asei, that's the subject of our Mishnah. You never know what the real reward is, and therefore take them all very seriously. The Tiferes Yisrael, one of the later commentaries on Perkei Avos here and one on the Mishnayos, see, he points out that the reason we have to do that is we have to realize that all mitzvos, whatever their relative level of importance, but they all share a common denominator and that they have an intrinsic ability to refine our soul. And therefore, whatever benefit there might be, number one, we can't guess what it is, but number two is there's a more overarching benefit that all mitzvos have, which is that by doing Hashem's command, it elevates and refines our soul. Hundreds of years before the Tiferes Yisrael said this, the Ramban, none other than the Ramban, in his commentary to the Torah in Shmos Perek Yud Gimel, a very, very famous passage where he discusses why so many mitzvos throughout the Torah, throughout Yiddishkeit, are considered to be Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, commemorating going out of Egypt, and we're not just talking about matzah and Korban Pesach and things on Pesach, tefillin and mezuzah and all sorts of things, Kiddush every Shabbos, so many things that are not connected ostensibly to the Pesach story or the historical dates of Pesach are Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? This is a curiosity that we should all have been piqued by this curiosity. So the Ramban is a very long and famous passage explaining this, but towards the end of that passage, the Ramban mentions our Mishnah, and after his basic theory, specifically about Yetziat Mitzrayim, is that it imparts, those mitzvos impart a certain message about God's role in the world. There's a certain emuna, there's a certain hashkafa that is conveyed by those that are so important that we need to repeat it over and over again. Beyond that specific point of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Ramban says in a more broad way, Lefichach Amru, that's why the Mishnah and Avos, Perek Beis, tells us to be careful about all mitzvos, even those which are considered quote-unquote kal, and not just the ones that are chavav. A chamur, why? Because says the Ramban, they are all chaviv, they're all beloved and chamud and precious to Hashem. Why? Because all of them, kavanas kol mitzvot, says the Ramban, is an unbelievable, axiomatic, overarching statement of philosophy of Judaism of the Ramban. Kavanas kol ha-mitzvos, shena'amin be'elokeinu, v'noda elav shehu boreinu, or boranu. That is to say, a common feature of all mitzvos is they impress upon us the idea and the belief that there is a God, there is a HaKadosh Baruch Hu who is the creator and is in control of the world. And since he told us to do X or Y, that's why we're doing it. So every mitzvah, says Ramban, whether it's quote-unquote kal, maybe there's such a thing as a kal, but even the kal, if I'm doing it, I'm highlighting my belief that Hashem runs the world and created the world. So whether it's a chamur or a kal, there might be side benefits or side factors which make one mitzvah more important or more severe than others. But there's a common thread, which is that they all communicate and impress upon us this idea Hashem is the creator and in control. Okay, the third thing that was mentioned in the Mishnah about calculating the relative reward versus the cost of mitzvos and averos. We mentioned it again. There's not much to add to the simple reading of the Mishnah. The basic point is a person should have the long view. Think about the long-term cost. It's true that sometimes, if you don't work on Friday in the evening, or you're not working on Shabbos, or you don't go to a meeting because it might be not kosher at the board meeting or whatever, maybe it'll cost you in the short term. But think about the reward you're going to get. Think about the long term. And again, in the reverse as well, maybe there's a certain pleasure or benefit to an avera, but that's in the short term. But think about the long term. In the long term, there will be reward for overcoming your temptation, and also punishment, frankly, if you don't. Again, that seems to be clearly the simple reading of the Mishnah. The Bartanura explicates this clearly. Take the long term, have the big picture in mind, and that will help you make the right decision. Okay, just to finish off the Mishnah, I'd like to spend another few minutes getting to the last thing in the Mishnah. Again, a very, very important phrase where Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi tells us, again, you have to be tone deaf not to realize how important something is when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, no less, tells us, Histakil b'shlosha dvarim v'yata bali de'avera. If you think of these three things, remember these three things, this is the secret to success, these three things, and you won't come to sin. And what were those three? Again, we mentioned the way most Mefarshim read the Mishnah, da mala mala mimcha ayin roeh, remember someone's always watching, ozen shama, someone's always listening, and kol ma'asecha b'sefer nechtov, and everything is going to be written down. So as I mentioned, that's the way most Rishonim line up the three things. Rabbeinu Yonah, who goes with that, he does add something very interesting and important. Rabbeinu Yonah does say, why couldn't the Mishnah have just told us this without the bodily metaphor? Why couldn't the Mishnah have just said, you should know, God knows everything that's happening, God hears everything you say, he sees everything you do. Why does it have to be dafka? There's an eye, there's an ear. Obviously, that's anthropomorphic. We don't believe that God has an eye. We don't believe that God has an ear. So why would the Mishnah go out of its way to use that anthropomorphic language? Presumably, you could have conveyed the idea without that bodily reference. So the Rabbeinu Yonah says something which I think is so true. He says, you don't need it from a philosophical level, but on an emotional level, he says, it makes it more real. It makes it more visceral when we can visualize actually someone, and in this case, it's not just a someone, it's the King of Kings, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, literally an ear listening to us, or an eye watching us. That makes it more real, more visceral, And that will not only make it more unlikely that, you know, more, so to speak, present, but what Rabbeinu Yonah adds, something that's maybe not so in fashion nowadays, but maybe it should be, and that is that it highlights the importance in a positive way of busha, of shame. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, if you really were able to visualize Hashem watching what you're doing, you'd be so embarrassed to do a certain avera. If you could really, really visualize, really, really visualize Hashem hearing the way you're talking, you'd be totally humiliated. You'd have busha if you to do such a thing. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, that's exactly what he's trying to say. A person should truly feel that, and then they won't come to sin. In that vein, how come the Mishnah, if the Mishnah wants to say everything is written down, what does that mean, everything's written down? Presumably, it means you're going to have to answer for everything. You don't get any freebies. Eventually, you're going to have to answer for everything. Okay, I hear that. But why do you need the metaphor of a book? What's the purpose of that? So the simplest understanding, again, like we saw, is this is the idea of God writing things down in a book, just like we think about from the Gemara on Rosh Hashanah. There's three books, the Book of Life, the Book of Death, the Beinonim. So just like God writes in a book, so to speak, on Rosh Hashanah, so you should think of God writing in a book forever, that after 120, there's going to be a big book written down from all the years. There's chapters for every year of your life, and God's been writing and keeping track, and nothing got lost. The book is there. The computer didn't crash. The book didn't get lost. You're going to have to look at the book. That's the simple understanding of the Mishnah, and that's fine. But two little nuances on that. One is that the Yalkut Shimoni in Iov says something which I think is actually, it's very scary to think of God keeping a book of our life. Trust me, I think it's very scary. But you know what might be scarier? What the Yalkut Shimoni, what the Medrash says in Iov, according to the Yalkut, after a person dies after 120 years, every person, him or herself, God is going to tell you, now you write a book of all the things you did in your entire life, write it all down, and then I want you to sign. I want you to sign the bottom of that, attesting to its veracity. Right? It reminds me of, you know, sometimes people used to say, I think in the name of the Chavetz Chaim, that, you know, after you die, Hashem will show you a movie of your life, you know, so to speak. You know, and you should know that everyone is going, so to speak, to see it. You know, but it's not, sometimes more scary than other people seeing the movie is you having to see the movie yourself. So here also, the Yalkut Shimoni is saying, it's not just that God wrote a book. You yourself are going to have to review and relive all of those mistakes you made and then sign that it really happened in front of Hashem. Again, the same idea, but perhaps a little bit of a scarier version. The Yaivitz, the Chassid Yaivitz, we've mentioned him in the past. He was one of the people who was part of the Girush Sfarad. He was one of the people in the 15th century who was expelled from Spain, who had a very important commentary then on Pirkei Avos, the Chassid Yaivitz. So he says, it's not so much a book. I mean, obviously it's not a book. But he says, it doesn't even mean a book. What does it really mean? It means that the sefer we're talking about is the lev or the neshama of each person. The Gemara in Tainus says, Nishmaso shel Adam, he meida alav, meida alav. That is to say, everything we do, every action we take, basically impresses and makes a permanent mark on our personality, on our neshama. I don't think you have to be so mystical to understand this. I think we can understand this even in a very rationalistic and a prosaic way. Basically, you should realize, says the Yaivitz, that everything you do is always going to leave its mark. There are no things which you do which don't leave any downside. Now, the good news is that that's true for all our mitzvos too. Every mitzvah we do will also leave a mark. It's in a good way. But every avera we do, says the Yaivitz, it's not pshat that God's writing it down, or even that we'll have to write it down and then remember it. It's that Hashem will look at our neshama, and our neshama will be a written book of what we, how we lived our life for 120 years. Because on our neshama, so to speak, will be written the impact of all the actions that we took. Just to conclude, I want to mention something which I think is also very important, and that is that the Me'iri has a different take almost completely on this Mishnah. That the Me'iri has a different categorization, not the whole Mishnah, I should say, excuse me, I mean on this particular thing. Most Mefarshim, as we mentioned, counted three things: the eye, the ear, and then the book, in short. But the Me'iri is clearly bothered by something which, you know, which should be bothering all of us, which is that the eye and the ear are basically the same thing. That God knows everything you did. There's Hashkacha Pratis, Hashem is watching, there's Hashkacha, nothing gets by God. He knew about it at the time. No matter what you did, he saw it, no matter what you said, he heard. Basically the same thing. Why would you count that as two separate things? There's such a big difference between the eye and the ear that they're deserving of two separate things. So the Me'iri actually puts those together. The eye and the ear is one thing, which means God knows what happens in this world. The book is a second thing That is, God remembers everything that happens. You're going to have to answer for that after 120. So what was the third, or really what was the first then? So the Miri has a chiddush. He says the first one was when the Mishnah said that there's something da lamala mimcha. When the Mishnah says da malamala mimcha, remember what's above you. Most Mefarshim say that's an introduction to what's above you, the eye who's watching and the ear that's hearing. The Miri says no, da malamala mimcha is something independent. That is, it refers to the fact that you should just believe in Hashem. If you would just believe in Hashem in a real way and really believe there's someone above you, that itself, forget the eye, forget the ear, that would already be enough. That's what the Miri says. But I think there's a better explanation, with all due respect, and that is based on something that Nefesh HaChaim says in Shar Aleph. Nefesh HaChaim has a famous doctrine of his philosophy. He says it in a very metaphysical, mystical way, but I think it makes sense on a prosaic and a more rationalistic way as well. But the Nefesh HaChaim says, what does that mean that there's something above you? Nefesh HaChaim says that there's many, many worlds and universes and cosmic impacts that are happening in worlds that are beyond, you can't even fathom all the different universes and galaxies and things that are happening up in Shamayim. And you should know, says Nefesh HaChaim, that every time you do a mitzvah, that doesn't just affect this world, it affects even all the upper worlds. It has cosmic significance. And God forbid, anytime you do an Aveira, you're doing tremendous harm, not only to yourself or what you do in this world, but each Aveira has cosmic significance. It's affecting many, many worlds. So that could be in line with the Meiri, what the Mishnah is here saying as well. Realize the impact of your actions. Again, the whole purpose of this Mishnah, the last part is, remember certain things and you'll do the right thing. If you remember certain things, it's a strategy for success. Remember these things and you won't do the wrong thing. Remember these things, they'll get you to do the right thing. So what's one of the strategies? Da malamala mimcha, which understood based on what we're saying now of the Miri and the Nefesh HaChaim means, realize the impact. We often, sometimes consciously and many times subconsciously, the way we rationalize the bad thing that we're doing or the mistake that we're making is, ah, come on, it doesn't really matter. I don't really matter. I'm one of the billions of people in the world. Ah, what matters? And this is one thing I'm doing. Does it really matter? Come on, it's no big deal. I know it's wrong, but come on, it's no big deal. So says the Meiri, says Nefesh HaChaim, da malamala mimcha. You realize everything you do, yes, you and me and all of us, it has massive, massive impact. Now again, if you're more mystical or metaphysically inclined, you could take the Nefesh HaChaim at face value. He's speaking very metaphysically. He was a big Kabbalist. He was speaking about all these other worlds. And for a lot of people, that will resonate. But I acknowledge that a lot of people, that doesn't resonate so much with. But even if you don't have to think about all those worlds in the cosmic sky, I think we should just realize that even without that, we often underestimate the impact of our actions. We sell ourselves short, sometimes, you know, deliberately, because that way we can feel better about what we're doing or not doing. But we don't realize the impact that we're having. All of us impact. Some people impact only a few people around us. Some people impact a larger group. If you're in any position of influence, if you're an older sibling, a counselor, you're a parent, a grandparent, let alone a leader in a community, your actions don't just impact you. They impact many, many, many people. Da malamala mimcha, realize there's a bigger picture here, and you're not just a small nothing. Everything you do has tremendous impact. If we would stop and think before we were tempted to do or not do a certain thing, you know, is this just about me? Is it just about the moment? Or is there a bigger picture here? Some tremendous impact that my correct action could have? Or, Rahman al-Islam, my negative action could have? If we would think in terms of the impact and actually give ourselves some credit. You know what? What we do matters. The decisions that we make, the choices that we make, they matter. If we would think about it in those terms, then each action is maybe a little bit, but they add up to something big. They're building us. They're having impact on the wider world, our community, our family, etc., etc., our yeshiva, our friends, whatever the case may be. So if we would think about that, I think that also could help, inspire and discipline us. And that's a whole new insight, which we get from the Meiri's reformulation or reorganization of the Mishnah with a twist that I'm adding from the Nefesh HaChaim. Okay, very much. Thank you very much. It's good to see everybody again. Stay tuned for whatever WhatsApp group or social media connections that we have, so that we'll tell you for sure, Mirtz Hashem, Blineder, there'll be a second shir later in the week on Parshas HaShavua, but I'm hopeful, depending on how things work out, that there might be a third shir in the middle of the week as well. Take care, everyone. Good to see you. Have a great, great day.